listening to Black Women Are Scary, the podcast that celebrates people of color writing horror. We're trying something new this year and following up our story episode with our author conversations. Our featured author this month is Akeem Alexis, who wrote The Lexicographer and One Tree Island. So let's lean in and listen to some scary Black people.
Lexicography. Like, I did have to look up and make sure that I understood what this job actually is. I was like, I think it's this, and sort of surprising to see that in a story, because it's like work, it's almost like invisible labor, right? Like you just use the dictionary and you don't think about the fact that somebody sat down and said these words are important, they matter, and they need to be documented and described and used as a reference, which is kind of a political act in and of itself, right? So tell us a little bit about lexicography, why this profession for your protagonist, and what is its importance to you?
Well, first and foremost, I would say my background has a lot to do with the idea of incorporating lexicography into the story. I studied linguistics in undergrad along with literature. So I am interested in things like language death, dialect, language variation, etc. To an extent, not too much. So I had that schema as foundation. When I came into the story. So the word lexicographer was not lost on me. However, I never really interacted with it because why would I?
Right.
You know? However, lexicography being the job where someone compiles dictionaries, creates dictionaries. As you said, it is a job that's usually overlooked. It's not something you see, really.
Right.
And in constructing the story based on climate change, and more particularly climate catastrophe and hope, I wanted to focus on something that people may not focus on really, and that is, as a result of climate catastrophe, there is human casualty, and in human casualty, there's language death, especially when it comes to small islands, anywhere in the world, small islands, tribes, isolated locations. Once you wipe out that community, whether it be through natural disaster or man-made, we know there are some men who have done that. In doing that, you're not only wiping out humans, you're wiping out their history, the culture, the language. It's very important in terms of the way we operate on a global scale when languages diminish, right? So lexicography is an important aspect of historiography in documenting history. In creating the story, I really wanted to incorporate some measure of that, document somebody who is aware that, you know, this island is diminishing and it needs to be documented in some way what was here. And I focused on language because we could document a whole lot of other things. So that is why I decided to hone in on lexicography, basically to try and touch on the documenting of linguistic histories.
Yeah. And also, like, who gets to document it? So this guy wasn't necessarily a professor at a university on the island, or anybody of, for lack of a better term, anybody of note, you know, like he was just kind of somebody who had a bit of a tough childhood. He was left, like, he was just like a guy on the street, but he survived. He's the last one standing. So it's just sort of like by default, because you were the only one left, this now falls on you, or he has taken it upon himself to be like, I will be the one who remembers, which is very romantic and very sad.
That is true. Yeah.
You know, it's poignant. And I love this thing that you said about language death, you know, thinking about that. It made me reflect on this time I went to the Native American Museum in DC, and there was this wall of Bibles on display, and they were all the Bibles that had been translated into native languages from all
Wow.
over the globe, right? So just wherever
Wow.
there was, well, from the Western Hemisphere, really. So wherever there was contact with indigenous people of the Western side of the globe during, once Christopher Columbus came over. So just like during that entire time of all the Europeans coming over and trying in their efforts to convert all the indigenous people, they translated the Bible into their languages. And since some of these folks have been wiped out, this is now the only written record of their language. So it ends up being this, they ended up kind of accidentally being their lexicographer. It's like
Lord.
the community and the language that you were attempting to stamp out, you ended up
Look
preserving.
at that.
It's very strange to see it because it is a very big wall.
Wow.
And there are many different Bibles, and they're all different like sizes. And you can look in and you're like, some of this is the only written version of this
Right.
language.
I mean, wow. It's really notable, the ways we as human beings can sustain ourselves beyond death. I mean, wow, yeah, that's really interesting. And even as you're saying that, I'm thinking now about the story in itself, because you know that climate change is something that is, I mean, it's real, right? And in that sense, are there any measures with regard to how we as people focus on languages, not the English language, the language of the colonizer, I would say, but those subsidiary languages that really cannot sustain without things like lexicography, things like people who are not professors in universities, who don't have agendas and particular ideas and things they want to get done. Just normal everyday people, what happens to them? And
Yeah, I think one of the things that's so powerful about this story is the fact that he just took it upon himself, and he is, it's really the lexicography or his practice of that is coming from a place of love. Right? It's like this is his language that he's preserving. This is his culture that he wants to remember and have be remembered and rebuild. And it made me think about the entire practice, who gets to be a lexicographer? Like, who even knew that that was a job? And like, how do you, if I wanted to be a lexicographer, like, what are the qualifications if
Where
I
do you
even
apply,
wanted to do that?
you know?
And in the beginning, when somebody, in the beginning, again, just going back to this thing of like the Bible, translated so they could convert more indigenous folks. Like that wasn't, I don't, the people who did that weren't necessarily, I don't know what their qualifications were. They were just, they were probably just like Jesuit priests who just were like, I can do this because the church said I could. Like it wasn't, they're like, what are, maybe the qualifications are ridiculous. Like, why couldn't it just be somebody,
I think that
like,
is really interesting. I wonder, I should probably Google lexicographers of history. Like, I don't even know anybody in the actual name of a lexicographer.
yeah.
I suppose those who need dictionary.
I mean, Webster, is that
Webster is Webster. Maybe he's
is
one. Is Webster even
that
a man? I
a,
mean,
yeah,
come
I don't know what that is. I don't know why
on.
it's called that. It's so funny, you get these tomes, if you will, where they're like, this is the book that holds this information, and you don't really stop to question, like, well, who decided to put these words together? Who decided that these were the words that mattered?
Exactly. Which is why I think now, today, we have a proliferate, a whole lot of dictionaries that are specific. We have Creole dictionaries, we have, I think there is an Amerindian dictionary. We have, I think there are people who have a self assume lexicographers who have decided, you know what, Who's Webster? Who's Collins? I am going to this. Because there's that.
Yeah, there's the I found this place called like I follow them. They're just like speak Nahuatl. Yeah, there's a original language of Mexico, and they have compiled a dictionary, and they like give classes on the language. So it's just going back again to like things that are dying or things that are being affected because of outside forces and wanting to preserve it. So you can take a class now in learning this indigenous
That's
language
cool.
of Mexico, and they created a dictionary, right? So it's like this word means this, and I can go in and translate things. And I know that that's new because there was a time before when I looked for it and that didn't exist. So people are taking it upon themselves. Or when you were talking about that, I thought about the Urban Dictionary, which is like a thing you can Google, and like I think people can just add to it. Like it's like a people's
That's so
dictionary.
interesting. Yes, because in our way, especially us Black people, we have a way of creating words every few months, so we have all lexicographers in our
Yeah, in a way, the internet allows anybody to be a lexicographer. It's kind of empowered that space, taken it out of like a precious, I don't know.
Out of the hands of the elite, I would say.
Your story feels like magic realism to me. Is it fair to say this? Were you in conversation with that style at all when you were writing this?
I would say that I've never been one to like label what I write, although writing this story was new for me because I would probably say I was writing and still do write literary fiction. I think that's the label people put on it. So when I wrote this, I think I didn't know what to call it. I assume magic realism would be really, really ideal, but then somebody else may say Afrofuturism, somebody else might say science fiction. I know that it was labeled climate fiction, and under climate fiction, there's a lot of magic realism in that, especially because we're dealing with something we can't see really. We can, but it takes long for us to see, and in that regard, magic helps us deal with things we can't see. And I think it may be appropriate to call it that. I won't, however, make it an exclusive thing where I only want it to be called magic realism. I know there are some writers who there's this writer on Twitter who I can't remember her name. She's very, very specific about what you call her work, right? And I think writers have that agency. If you want to do that, then obviously you can, should. But
Yeah, I agree. I feel that in particular BIPOC writers, there are often magical elements in the writing, and it can make it difficult to box them into a single genre. So I'm wondering, like, have you experienced any challenges with describing or labeling your work, whether it's you don't know what to call this, or people are like demanding, like, what is this? And you're like, I don't
I am definitely in the category of I don't know what to call this. Even when I'm writing general fiction, sometimes I write a story and it's not the structure of it is not
know.
what people would say is a story. Some
Right.
people say, well, what do I call it if it's not a story? It's not a poem. I mean, it's not an amendment to a law. So what do I call it? It does help when someone else says, do you think this is magic realism? And I'm like, yeah, I think it might be. I'm good. I'm not, it's not bad, yeah. So yes for that. So I think somebody called it political fiction, and I was like, I don't, I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure. Maybe if writers usually say once you write the story, it's no longer yours. So the readers take ownership and they say, well, I think it's this and I think it's that. So I think I'm under that umbrella. I'm very flexible with what genre my stories fall under. There is magic realism, I would say, in it, obviously, in obvious ways, right? So I can't get away from that.
there is no peer review. He is an appointed lexicographer, like, and it seemed as though this is in a world, because the water has risen, where whoever wants the job is the expert.
Yeah.
Like, there's lexicographers all over,
mm-hmm.
because they're just trying to preserve human culture at this point before it's gone. Like, there's certain
gone.
Things that are being done by robots in this future that you have. You know, there's certain things that, like, are just automated, and the robots could care less about preserving language. I remember you had a line in there about that, which I thought was like, this is a huge thing to think, where it's, you know, it's such a human thing, and it's like they don't care about that. You know, they have their language. That's fine for them. That they're ones and zeros. You know, so he doesn't have anybody who's like verifying or quantifying whether or not that's important or that's true.
Yes. Yes.
Which feels very, perhaps this is why someone said it was political fiction, because it mm-hmm. feels radical. Like, he's doesn't have that. He also doesn't need that. And that's not being questioned. Like, no one is like,
yes,
that's not really, as it would be in a class where you're with this professor and they correct you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's not happening to him.
So true.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I agree. And I was thinking about that too when I was writing the end of the story, where the ship comes with the robots and the people from the West, who are, and in a way, it does ring back to colonization, where he's just fine on this island, and then you come saying, "Oh, well, we're here to save you." It's here. It's a bit barbaric. And he rejects that. I'm also thinking about while the island was diminishing, there would have been people on the island, right, who could afford to probably be a lexicographer in a really, really impactful way, and they probably left on yachts and fancy boats to head out and die, you know. To them, what was the priority in that sense? It's a lot to think about.
Yeah, it's his world, or the state of the world in your story. When that ship shows up, it felt so invasive and so aggressive. And in this moment, like, these are the elements of, you know, because Black Women Are Scary is a horror podcast. And I bet a lot of people be like, I don't think this is a horror story. And I'm like, there's so many moments that are, though, when they talk about this. You're speaking about this oceanic rapture, which, you know, him watching all these people drown. I'm like, how is this not terrifying? And just having to deal with being the only one, like having to be, you know, deal with being the person who survives, and the way he decides to.
And it's really important that you identify the fact that some people may not think this to be a horror story. You know what they would see it as? If this were a movie, they would see it as a disaster movie.
Right,
rather than a horror movie. And then it speaks to how much we've acclimatized to disaster, because when is disaster not horror? When is that not scary? When are lives not lost in a way that have us shocked?
Yeah. I mean, when he's describing all these people being swept away, I'm like, this is terrifying. He's the only one who went up. You know, and then folks evacuating, like you said, folks abandoning. They don't try to save. They don't try to stay. They don't, you know, they're just like, we just have to get out of here.
Yeah.
So when he survives and somehow perseveres and then thrives, when him and the woman and Snake and the bird, like, all these people are just like doing their thing. And we get, you know, we live in that space for a while. When this ship shows up, and like, I just remember that line where it comes, and that robot on the ship, like, just keeps stretching its arms, and they just keep going out and out and farther, and like reaching for them in a way that's like, we are here to save you. We are, like, some automated thing is going on. And I was like, that is this, it was so scary to me, and it made me cringe. Like, the idea of something gross reaching out for you and trying to touch you. And I, like, imagined these, like, slinky, silvery arms, like, stretching out farther. You know, it's almost cartoonish and, like,
mm-hmm.
under the auspices of like, we're here to help you. Isn't it so great? And the times that that has happened to me, not that literally, but like I've been somewhere with somebody who I just thought was kind of skeevy. And they were like, but I'm helping you. And you're like, but if I didn't ask for help and you do it without my consent, is it still help? Like, what
That
is
is not
this?
help. You're bothering me. That's what you're doing. You are bothering me.
Yeah, right. Like
Kidding.
the kind of gaslighting that goes on with that. It's like, no, this is help. And it's like, but I like what I got going on.
It's help to you because you want to feel as though you're helpful. It's not help to others, especially who didn't ask for help. And that it speaks to neocolonialism as well, because the West, they love to say we need to help other nations solidify democracy. They did not ask you to invade their territory. You could relax.
Yeah, it's okay. In
It's fine.
this piece, you really see that perspective of like, I didn't ask you to help me. And also, it doesn't really look like you've helped yourselves. Like the boat doesn't sound like a good place. So like when it comes in, it's like steaming and hot and like farting and things like that. Like this is what I'm imagining. And like and it's just like a big eyesore in the middle of what we've already established as a kind of paradise.
Yes, and they haven't learned anything.
Yeah.
Why? You realize the entire world has changed as a result of this pollution. Why are you coming here booming that black smoke over here? Get away. Us.
So you see that and you feel that and you want them to leave and you're very glad when One Tree Island decides to stay as One Tree Island. Like it's like I'd rather live on One Tree Island than get on this boat. So you've pushed it and painted it in a way where that it's a very satisfying ending. It's like it does feel very hopeful. It's like we're gonna rebuild. I also think there's this great theme of stewardship of like, which is strong because of the kind of displacement that happens with climate crisis. And so in your story, it's like they don't have to abandon their homelands. They can, in fact, like reboot in a sense. It's like, no, we can tend to it and we can care to it and we can bring this back. Or, we'll be a new thing now, but we don't necessarily just have to like turn our backs on it, which is an interesting, I feel like that's something that's not explored because either because people don't get to stay, like even if it's just like your neighborhood where you have to like move out and you can't like keep it and tend to it and grow it. Like there's just not as much conversation around like keeping, staying and tending. Period.
Exactly. There's not a lot of hopeful conversation around a lot of those things because various reasons, I guess. You have to actually speak to some people are just tired, I think Sahura in the story, she seemed very tired. I felt like when I was writing her, she was just tired and she wanted some sort of respite somewhere. But you have to prove to those, or they have to prove to themselves that in their tiresome, they have to be able to protect what was theirs. They have to see some value in their history and in their legacy as people. Because once you decide to let that go, a part of you goes as well. Right?
Gosh,
And that's what about generations after? That part of you cannot be recovered in that way.
It's hard though to think about that because people just think about like the next new thing and they're not thinking about generations. People kind of abandoned legacy. It's like no one cares about it anymore.
And that's a topic that's so pervasive. I mean, gentrification as well. Speak to that. So.
Yeah, but even in the gender, like when I go to the neighborhoods, walk through my neighborhood, where this is happening, it's like I'm looking at these new things that are being built and I'm like, this isn't, whoever's building this didn't think about it. Some of them are ugly. And so it's like, this isn't about aesthetics. This isn't about legacy. Like I don't think this I'm looking at it being built and it's not even really well
Yeah, this
built.
is
So,
pure capitalism. This isn't about, you're not even thinking about people living around here or being, you're not thinking about affect, you know, at all in that.
yeah, it doesn't look like it's built to last. It's look like it's built for right now to fill a need, and then when it breaks down, that's fine. I'm kind of like, huh. So in the film adaptation of your story, okay, we've decided that it's going to be a movie now, and it's been picked up. Who plays the main characters? Let's cast this thing.
Let's see. Okay, I think I want the snake, who I think is a very, very motherly figure. I don't know. I don't like snakes, but my snake is cuddly. I think that Shirley Ralph would be really good as a voice. You
So
know.
it's animated or so. Is it going to be like an animated snake,
Yeah.
or is it going to be like animatronics? Like they're going to build this thing out and it'd be puppeted by people. What do you think?
You know what? Now I'm thinking, should it be animated where we just have voice actors?
I mean, it can.
It can.
That would make sense.
I would make, yeah, I would like that.
Yeah, I mean, it could be like a computer animated thing. So it's very like three dimensional. I'm just thinking of like all these like Jungle Book,
Yes, I'm thinking Lion King. I'm thinking. So you know what? As I thought about the Lion King, I think the Kobo, the bird, like something very similar to Zazu.
Oh, okay. Do you want that? Do you want John Oliver?
John Oliver or Rowan Atkinson, one of them.
Okay, so some British
The
dude. Oh,
play the bird, who I think speaks very, very correct English.
I see. Wait, who is Shirley Ralph? I'm so sorry, I don't
Oh, do you watch Abbott Elementary? Don't.
know. Oh, is
She's Barbara, the older teacher.
she's the one who just won all these awards, right?
She is. She
Yes,
is.
of
She's
course. Okay,
also
now I know.
Jamaican.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Which is good.
Yeah, she just got like an honor. Okay, yes, of course. Now I don't know why I blanked on her name. I was like, I know who this person is. Yes. Yes. Oh, she would be great as a snake. Oh,
Really
yeah.
great.
So, Shirley Ralph, John Oliver, I think he's
Yes.
great as Zazu. And I think you need that kind of like dry, kind of biting humor for the bird, for the cobra.
Yeah, I agree. And then, well, Tony, who is the main character, I'm thinking, oh
Yeah.
God, who should I put for Tony?
He's like in his 20s, right?
Yeah, I would say so.
You need like a young, what is he, young up and
I need
coming
a
eyes.
young character. What can I get?
I can do a Jamaican accent. Ken is Jamaican or can do
Who?
it. Right? He has to be able to, he has to be from the Caribbean, or at least can
Yes,
convincingly do a
you
Caribbean accent.
know what? I taught elements of drama last semester, and I had a good student called Jaden. I think Jaden would be good. I'm
Okay.
hiring Jaden for that
Okay. All right. So then we'll in the key role is going to be like an up and comer, a fresh face. He'll just be like making his mark on the scene. And then Sahura, right? That's
Sahura.
his
Yeah,
left.
Angela Bassett.
Oh wow. This
Angela
is
Bassett.
an
I would
all-star
add
cast here.
Angela Bassett. Nobody else but Angela Bassett for
Okay.
that
All
role.
right.
Yeah. Because Sahura is like in her 50s. She's like 50 years old.
Angela Bassett is older than that, but you can't tell because she's like a vampire and
Exactly.
an
You can't
immortal or
tell.
something. I'm not sure.
Which is good for magical realism.
Yeah. We're all pretty sure she's not. She's an alien. She's a supernatural being. Yeah, I mean that in the best of ways. Like, she looks amazing.
Yeah, so that's my cast.
Yeah, that's a good cast. That is a good, that's solid. I would watch that movie.
You speak it into the atmosphere.
Yeah, let's do it. It's like, this is going to be the next animated film by Pixar. And yeah, that's we're gonna watch this. The lexicographer on One Tree Island, and all the a new generation of young people will learn what a lexicographer is,
You'll
and
be
they'll
invited to
be
be screening.
yeah. There'll be all this
Good.
curriculum around it, around like the art of lexicography. We'll have like little journals for kids. Write down the words you think matter and what how they're defined. Oh yeah, no, this could be like a whole thing. We should do this. This needs to
This happened.
happen.
I agree. I agree.
So what are you working on now?
Oh gosh, a bunch of things. I'm working on a short story collection. I'm working on a poetry collection. I'm working on a novel. But that will take a while, so
Yeah. You're like,
yeah,
that's like a long
that's
thing.
a long thing. So I would say just I'm just gonna continue writing. So I'm always working on something, I would say. Because I've written a good bit now, I'm trying to work on getting them as a cohesive unit. So, you know,
Okay. So the short
they're
story collection are all your short stories. You're just
yeah,
gonna write like a bunch. I see.
all mine, yeah. So that's what I'm working on now. I'm getting more sleep as well.
Yeah, that's important. That's good.
Yeah.
And where can folks find out more about your work?
Oh well, I'm on Twitter. My name is Hakim Alexis, AKHIMALEXIS 1 on Twitter.
Okay.
And my link, what do you call that? Link tree is attached to my Twitter. So I have my publications in there if anybody wants to
Okay.
take a look
All
at
right,
it.
so I'll be sure to put that in the credits too, so people can like go to all the other things that you've written
Yeah, no problem.
and know more about your work and follow you.
Yes, a lot of that.
Well, thank you so much for taking this time to speak with
Thank
me
you. Thank you. I had a pleasure. It was great.
and for having us, letting us produce your story.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much for doing that. I mean, I appreciate it. To the moon and back. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in. Support Spooky Black Chicks with a tax-deductible contribution through the link in the bio or by leaving a rate and review. Tune in next week for our flash fiction episode with a special guest. Till next time.